Thank you very much, Sukuna. And as is customary, the floor is now open for your questions. So if there are any questions, queries, or clarifications that you need to make, now is the opportunity.
Would it be possible to outline the strategy you have at Dialog Broadband to get it back to profitability? Television, I guess it's a matter of adding subscribers and moving up ARPU, but what would you do at Broadband?
Yeah, they are drilling down on Dialog Broadband from an entity point of view, but if I can step back a little bit on the restructuring that we carried out at the group. We have basically taken a segment-based structure, go-to-market structure, as well as the centralization of the business units in order to increase efficiency. So in that sense, we look at our business lines, mobile, international, fixed broadband and telephony, television, and infrastructure. Now, the entity distribution of these businesses is somewhat skewed. So, for example, our fiber asset lies partly with DBN, partly with Dialog Telecom. Likewise, the infrastructure, some of the towers are with DBN, some are with Dialog Telecom. The broadband business on WiMAX and the CDMA business.
Control over.
The broadband business on WiMAX and the CDMA business are the two material verticals within DBN, and we are focusing our improvement initiatives on those two. So CDMA, broadly speaking, we don't see much growth left in this market. However, with the low prices going to be taken forward more strictly and a general upturning RPMs in the market, which we can hope for, there could be some growth at CDMA, in the CDMA business. And Northeast, again, we are leading in infrastructure, so we should be able to see something there. WiMAX, lot of potential, and we are seeing good growth, as you saw, 23 or 26% year on year. But again, we have taken an approach of targeting high ARPU customers with WiMAX, not to swing the bat in terms of subsidies and go very conservatively on the acquisition phase, but secure good customers and high ARPU revenue earning customers. We have, as Supun mentioned, end of Q4 2009, there is a, it's not yet passed through as in a board resolution, but we have provided for the depreciation at an accelerated rate for both these businesses. So CDMA and WiMAX will be fully depreciated by end of next year. So this is a punishing, a very, very aggressive approach to recognizing useful life. But certainly, this is something we will review going forward based on vendor certifications and software upgrades and so on, because the lifetime of the asset can be, now with advancing technologies, can be advanced with a simple software upgrade, the useful life could be repositioned. So I would, basically in terms of DBN, I would look at the EBITDA line. And at the EBITDA line, there are basically selling strategies in place. Costs are pretty thin. There are strong selling strategies in place to push the WiMAX line to bridge this 23-25 million deficit at the EBITDA level using the WiMAX technology. But as I said, DBN carries so many assets for the group, and our management focus is also more on making the business lines profitable and less so on making that entity per se, because it's very much integrated with the rest.
And so, I'm going to hit you with a really hard curveball question. These impairments happened under your watch. what assurances are there that going forward such things don't happen again?
Okay, if you look at the breakdown of these impairments last year, the 6 billion was, I would say, taking an opportunity to rescale the business. The assets which we took out in that the big chunk, the 6 billion network modernization, was an active decision rather than an obsolescence-based decision. If we ran those equipment, they would run for the next 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
It was a decision whether we should take that call early and take advantage of a better operating cost structure and therefore cash outflow situation, or defer it and maintain the P&L from an end point of view. However, there were, I would say, around a billion of impairment in its true sense, where we felt that the lifetime of the asset would not go beyond an year or two. There, I think, with the degree and the speed at which technologies change year on year, I wouldn't say that we will never be faced with the opportunity. I would say an opportunity or a situation where around that value of acceleration needs to be done. This is a tough question. I mean, do you play around with your useful lives on the side of being conservative, or are you as optimistic as possible? If you take India, I think I mentioned this before, you look at the useful life estimates in India, they're much, much longer. Even the CDMA networks in India, I think, are running to 2018 or 2020. GSM base stations are depreciated at 15 years. Ours is 7 years. So,
If I can just stop you there and say that okay, there is shareholder value destruction when this impairment happens. Now, with the benefit of hindsight, what could you do going forward to mitigate this kind of thing? That invariably obsolescence is a risk in this business. So what can you do going forward to try to reduce this kind of thing? I mean, is it that the technology curve will be less steep?
I think when it came to that 6 billion impairment, what we recognized was there is a step change. The technology curve was sort of a binary decision we had to take. Do we go TDM or do we go IP? Now, I don't see a step change like that happening in the near future. So it's a complete generation change. And I think, as we pointed out last year, the payback, we had 60 million in the books, but to replace that, it cost only 4 million, equivalent in IP-based NGN. And the operating cost saving paid for that 4 million within around 11 months. So you get, that was a ridiculous equation, I mean, when you look at it, which, unless there's a step change in technology, I don't see that kind of waterfall in the future. The rest, the acceleration that we are performing, conservatism in terms of bringing useful life down and rescaling the lives of assets, in a sense, is also will serve to align better with the technology life cycle.
Just a few more questions. One was, you know, I find a significant overhang on your stock is this $70 million loan facility from your parent company. Now, you'll just make a statement that you will settle it fair to the company and the shareholders. The longer this overhang continues, you know, there is a dilutory impact of it. What are your plans?
I think I'll stick with that previous statement. What I can assure you is that there will be nothing dilutive to minority shareholders. I think that's the premise Asiata and the board and everyone around the table is very certain about that. Nothing will be done which dilutes minority shareholding. So there are many methods around it, either a payback or equity cost, which can balance it out. So depending on the cash position, and we'll obviously consult shareholders before doing so.
Then on your manpower, you froze wages, right? And I think many of your management took a salary cut also. You can't sustain that, right? A lot of people's expectations must be rising. What is your plan to labor cost increase? It's too sensitive to say this.
I wouldn't want to, you know, pitch a number into the future because expectations would increase even further. But we'll manage it within a manpower to revenue ratio, which we have benchmarked. So that is our objective, to maintain manpower cost to revenue ratios in line with the regional benchmark. We are actually a little below regional benchmark at the moment. So, but you won't see anything significant. It's more.
And what are your budgeted capex going forward?
Well, for this year, we are projecting around mobile capex around 60 million.
Dollars.
Yeah.
And then just some regulatory issues. There's a lot of publicity about number portability.
Mobile, but to ensure that fixed line and certain other equal access conditions come in at the same time. We have a strong rationale for that. We will fight for that. Are we worried about MNP? There are some preparatory steps to take, obviously, because our market share is disproportionately high in the postpaid segment. Therefore, we will strengthen many areas on this count, but globally what we found is that MNP is a non-event, and in fact in some markets the market leader has managed to mop up usage from others. England, UK was a good example where Vodafone gained after MNP. In many other markets, MNP has left room for the market leader to actually bring in more than they lose.
My last question is, this P.V. Jayasundara is quoted saying in the newspapers he will simplify taxation, reduce it, etc. Do you see any windfall or benefit coming to your industry?
We have made submissions to the Taxation Commission. Actually, I think in dialogue of the mobile industry case, this 30% of indirect taxes is what is painful from a yield arbitrage point of view. So for every rupee the customer spends out of his wallet or consuming power, we get 70% or 70 cents. I wouldn't lobby for that to be removed because it doesn't solve the problem. If you remove that tax, operators will simply discount it away again. So we are not really lobbying for the removal, but we are looking at more in terms of faster rebates on our infrastructure like the TDF and the various other funds that the government has.
Thank you very much indeed, sir. Are there any more questions? There's one more there.
I think the interest paid, interest cost has come down drastically compared to the year on year. I assume that you have not considered the Axiata parent company loan. So if you, don't you think that you should make some kind of a provision? If I'm not mistaken, I don't think you have paid any interest on that. So, if you had paid, let's say, even a nominal interest rate, what would be the impact on the bottom line?
Yes, we haven't provided because there is no retrospective, it was an interest-free loan in terms of a shareholder advance. So there was no need to provide because there won't be any retrospective effect. If at any stage it's going to get converted to a market loan, we'll start providing. We haven't really worked out that number.
If you take average rate, maybe we can say if it's a dollar, a foreign currency, around 4 to 5%. assets which are working out on the balance outstanding. Even if you go for international borrowings right now, like in the case of OCBC, it's pretty much cheaper. So it's possible to work it out, but there's no requirement for us to provide it for right now. Since last year. If you provide it for this year, it will be the full 3 months for the first quarter, 6 months for the half year.
So it like what you said earlier, it will not be, it won't be a dilutive effect on the shareholders, so it will probably not be converted to equity. And also on this capital expenditure, I think it has, slightly reduced compared to last year. Is it in line with the conversion to NGN, or has there been an effort to reduce on capital expenditure?
Mix of both. There is a more JIT approach to meeting capacity requirements. That also becomes far more feasible when your growth curves have started leveling out. If we trace back to 2006 and 2007, the CAGR was so high you had to be ready with network capacity to meet demand, otherwise you get congested. So now with the growth in terms of minutes also flattening, it's much easier to do a JIT approach and control capex. On the other hand, pricing, with the Axiata group leverage, pricing has come down by a large amount. And third is NGN, of course, plus with the IP conversion, incremental capex is much, much less, especially in the core network, in the backbone. What we predicted in terms of cutback on future capex and opex have been more than realized.
Little more micro-level question. What is your average length of an average call, prepaid and postpaid, on the mobile front? On prepaid. Okay. And how has that trended over the last year?
Line with the growth that we saw in MOUs, we saw some improvement and extension of the usage, but over the last three quarters, it's fairly flat at around between 1.5 minutes.
Okay, and finally, the regulator has been making a lot of noise on more firm regulations out there, among which the price flow being firmer and at least 2 rupees for the first year. Do you think it will increase after that? I mean, just what is your sense as to what that means?
Increasing a flow, from discussions we had, seems unlikely at this stage, because that will precipitate in a tariff increase. And that is not something that is desired by, obviously, the government also wouldn't want to see a costing, tariff increase. But keeping the flow at 2 rupees and that for off-net traffic and something reasonable for on-net, we'll keep the level at this phase. The cash flows will keep improving. No, precisely. I mean, I think that's a good point. Our sort of approach, or our lobby to the regulator, was make interconnect actual. Because that is a fact of the industry, right? How much it costs to terminate a call. So make interconnect the actual number, however ugly it may be, and let the market run free, because that will control the blood pressure on the two sides of each network. Right? But I think the compromise that is being made is that interconnect will not be 100% on full cost absorption in terms of cost of capital and so on. It will be a more mix of a cost-based and a market palatable rate.
which is fine. I mean, I think in most markets, that's how things are. They eventually end up. And maintain a flow to keep the operators well behaved.
Estimated net impact from interconnect settlement. Do you think there will be a change in the behavior of the traffic?
Yes, I think that's the prediction, that actually due to behavior change, that the net may not be that significant. Because traffic will balance out eventually.
Then will your competitors reprice the offerings? Because the termination is no longer free.
They for market reasons, they may not reprice.
Right.
Is going forward for new customers, they might reprice. For existing customers, yes, Dr. said for market reasons, it will be hard. But at least incremental ads, we'll see some correction in pricing.
Do you have a sense of how many Upahara customers there are?
Close to about 700,000.
Just one more question there.
Any more cost savings to come from the initiatives you took last year that are really left, or could you quantify that in any way?
Yeah, there are. I won't want to put a number because that's going forward, but we are equally confident of delivering similar, I mean, ratio wise, similar improvements this year. A lot of the initiatives actually are kicking in even as we speak. So the start dates in terms of giving up buildings, one or two more buildings we are targeting, so based on termination clauses, takes time. So there's a stream of stuff coming in.